by myself and the chairperson, actually. So I just needed to go there and make arrangements with her that she stays there and I chair in the meantime. But welcome to all of you here, and also the officials from the Department of Home Affairs and all other guests, people present. On our agenda today, we have the briefing by the Department of Home Affairs on infrastructure expansion and maintenance. The delegation from the department is headed by Mr. Malloy, the Acting Promotion Manager of Gauteng. Maybe you can just be so kind to introduce also to us the other members of the delegation once again, and then after you've done that, you can start. But just before that, I think there are apologies. Secretary?
There's an apology from Honorable Makuba, I think she's out of the country. And then there's another one from Dr. Moida. He said he wasn't able to come to the meeting. And then from Honorable Botman, she's coming late. She said, no, there was somebody who collapsed in the plane, so she was delayed at the airport in Cape Town, so she'll be joining us anytime.
Thank you very much. Are those all the apologies? Looks like it. Mr. Malloy, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable members, we hear the delegation from Home Affairs. Myself leading as the head of the delegation. I'm with Mr. Cecil Sauls, the Chief Director and IGR in the department, as well as Mr. Mhajane, Kefot Mhajane, also from IGR. So thanks, Chair. Maybe also to extend apologies that DG would not be able to make it today.
Thank you very much. You can go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We are here to present the infrastructure plan and maintenance plan of the Department of Home Affairs. You'd see that the plan covers the whole MTEF period, the MTEF period, which is 2010-11 up to 2013-14. We had to do the plan because funds are given over this period, and we had to look at how infrastructure is going to be rolled out throughout the organization to ensure that we then are able to meet our obligations to our customers out there. The program for today is in the manner that we outlined there. Looking at the strategic links of the infrastructure expansion plan to the department as well as to the government plans, the total number of offices occupied by the DHA, the core processes, that's the whole table of contents right up to strategic interventions required. I will try to run through the program as quickly as possible so that the members should not say we're running through a frenetic pace, but that we have to ensure that things are then delivered properly to this August House. The strategic links to the DHA infrastructure expansion plan. We had linked our objectives to the government outcomes, which are an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. Okay. But linked to the government outcomes is the ministers were also entered into an agreement with the president, and of those that we are supporting as infrastructure is that turnaround times for all services, queuing times, and unit cost per services are going to be accounted for. The maximum distance for a citizen to travel to access Home Affairs services. You would notice that the focus of the presentation is on access in terms of infrastructure. We have then planned to open 80 additional offices in the MTEF period, so that then it covers the footprint that we want to cover to reduce the time it would take for our citizens to access Home Affairs services. So that is the plan going forward. That they are linked to government outcomes in total. The total number of offices occupied by the DHA 2006. This includes what we used to call regional offices, which we have a total of about 44 district offices, which we have a total of 137. All those have been lumped together as local office large, taking into account the new model that we're using within the department. And in some district offices, or by virtue of their sizes, have been lumped into the local office medium. So we have 144 of those offices. Then we have small offices, there's 221 of those. Then we have various other offices that we providing services at. We have your refugee reception centers, we have your ports of entry, and we also have residential offices where where our staff are accommodated at border areas. The total then infrastructure in terms of coverage is 506. Of those, some are state-owned and others are leased buildings. You see on the slide that I've displayed that it's various provinces, a breakdown per province that indicates where these offices are, with the head office being located in Gauteng. We have four of these offices that indicate that the head office is scattered across the Pretoria. And so it creates a bit of a challenge for us to deliver services in to some extent. That is why the move going forward is to look at a triple P, where the head office will be relocated and will be located at a single place where the whole chief directors, DDGs and DGs, inclusive of the ministers, will be located in the same place. So that is why then there's a strategy moving forward to look at these. Then the core processes and key objectives. The acquisition of office accommodation as a core process. The maintenance of office accommodation, there's lease administration. We have refurbishment and rehabilitation of offices. We have occupational health and safety, compliance. Those are the core processes. And then the challenges relating to footprint expansion. There's no priority afforded to DHA in relation to expeditious conclusion of lease agreements and procurement of government-owned facilities. With regard to this point, we're saying that in spite of the level of service that Home Affairs provides, it does not seem to be getting that kind of support from the DPW in terms of its relationship with us to get us to give us priority in terms of acquisition of space. And enabling us to acquire the spaces according to our norms. There's lack of suitable office accommodation in rural areas. In rural areas, it's a huge challenge to get accommodation for offices, given that while there's abundance of land, there's processes that need to be followed, where the chiefs would be able to donate land, but then you would find that the processes that pertain to DPW are very slow to get the land over to government to ensure that then an accommodation for Home Affairs is provided. But we then looked at options and what then can we do. We looked at how do we enable us to deliver in rural areas. We had looked at schools that we can co-locate our offices in schools so that we are able then to provide services. For the Department of Education has gone a long stride in getting its infrastructure in place. But for us then to short circuit all these other processes that are at DPW, we have then looked at how then best can we short circuit co-locating our offices in a small portion of the school without creating a havoc for the education environment. But we want to co-locate ourselves. It's something that we are thinking about within the organization to enable us to short circuit the DPW processes. Then there's lack of funds to procure DHA-owned facilities. Funds are limited to an extent. We've been allocated a set amount of money for us to create facilities. For example, in the current financial year, we've been allocated 110 million rands to create facilities at border posts. This becomes a challenge because then that money gets handed over to DPW. And as Home Affairs we must get WCS numbers from DPW that are going to enable us to build those facilities that we want to bring about improvements at Border Post. So we have noted that there's various challenges. Our staff at Border Post are located in what was used as cells in the past. So it's an atrocious environment that they find themselves in. So we have looked at that and are addressing that to enable us to provide a conducive environment, much the same way that we have done with civic services. We're looking at immigration services to improve the facilities in that range as well. So there's also shortage of funds for devolution from Department of Public Works, which is about we made a study and looked at and made an analysis of what sort of monies that are being devolved to departments. And it seemed that there's a shortfall of about 60 million for us to meet our obligation in terms of facilities. Then the DHA cannot confirm funds, which costs delays in procurement processes. Whilst the DPW is a problem, we also as DHA are creating problems for DPW, for we take longer to confirm funds for them to be able to procure sites for us. So it's a process that not only is negatively impacted on us by DPW, but we also do have a negative impact on it. But it's something that we are improving on and looking at how best do we do that in confirming funds. For there was a time in the organization where we had to make sure that if we confirm funds, indeed we have those funds available in our kit to be able to provide the service. Then a decision was made that wherever an office is relocated, we then have to decide whether we relocate it to a site that would be a relative similar cost and nothing above that cost. But because procurement of sites is not, you might have agreed 5 years ago that you're going to get a site at a particular cost, and 5 years later the cost has escalated, and the cost for acquiring sites would be a bit of a challenge. So those were the challenges that we had faced within the organization. Then the lack of funds on the budget for IS, for security services, for furniture and equipment for the back office. Whilst we have gone on and refurbished the front end of the office, where we have a new look and feel, there still is a problem with regard to the back offices. We still have furniture, old furniture that is in back offices. So there's an effort to get funds, to get our offices to look and feel the same for our staff as well, so that they are also in a conducive environment. There's long procurement processes and finalization of leases by DPW. As I had indicated, DPW processes are tedious, long, and they take forever to get concluded. So maybe there's a proposal within the organization to take some of the smaller leases and do them ourselves. So some of the projects that are costing less to do them ourselves. But then the infrastructure expansion plan. Civic services will explore various procurement options, such as the park homes or prefabricated structures. There's an option where we do a lease to own, the sharing of premises where I spoke about, like where you have your schools where we can locate ourselves. That's co-location. Then there's purchase of property and accommodation. Where we are able to purchase our own accommodation, we should be able to pursue that as a strategy. Then the private-public partnerships, that relates more to our effort to get our head office located in a single place. So looking at the public-private partnership would enable us to do that location of home affairs in a single space where we would have services provided from a single point, particularly from a head office perspective. Then dependencies to achieve the balance. The availability of land or suitable premises for purchase, availability of funds, bearing in mind the reprioritization process that's currently in progress. Procurement process of Department of Public Works for contractual negotiations and conclusion of lease agreements. Commitment and willingness of other government departments on sharing of premises. You would find that the Department of Justice would not want to share premises with Home Affairs. Or as an example, not related to Home Affairs, and you would find that some of our offices are being kicked out of those premises. So it's just a matter of us tying down agreements very closely so that it does not become an abnormal situation where the provincial manager has then to go and deal with issues regarding the Department of Justice. So it's something that we as head office would have to look at and ensure that things are done properly at that level. It's not a pervasive thing that justice is kicking Home Affairs out. It shouldn't be misconstrued as that. It's just that in some instances, there are instances where some court managers just are not willing to accommodate Home Affairs in their premises. Sometimes it's understandable, because then things like divorce actions have been taken down to local magistrate level, and they would want space to have that activity done in their premises. Then they would then decide to take Home Affairs out of the equation. So those are the things that we face with. But in others, they're very accommodative in making sure that our Home Affairs gets accommodated as well in this. The DHA infrastructure plan 2011-2014-15. The broad infrastructure strategy of the department is to continue the expansion of the DHA footprint to meet the needs of citizens according to acceptable norms. The norms that we had set ourselves as an organization is that a person should not travel in excess of 25 kilometers to access Home Affairs, except in the Northern Cape where distance is, the geographical area is sparse, where we had set a 50 kilometer radius so that the person should not travel 50. So as we do our expansion plan, we look at that model to say, are our people reaching us in less than 25 kilometers? So we use mobiles, we use various other channels that are available to us to ensure then that we close the gap and people don't spend a lot of money to access Home Affairs services. I would make an example of a office in Carnarvon where a person, before we opened the office, is actually currently in the process of opening an office. We had gone to Carnarvon to look at the need that the people are having there. And in one of the interviews we had with one of our clients, they had indicated that a simple matter like a death in the family was a tragic thing for them. Not only that, a loss of a family member, but that they had to spend money in excess of about 8,000 rand to get to a Home Affairs office in Kimberley. So that them hiring a taxi to go and acquire a certificate was a tedious exercise, an expensive exercise. So we then had to rush and move with speed to ensure that aid service is provided at an area like Carnarvon. So, but those are not only areas that one has looked at. There are other areas as well where it is quite expensive to access Home Affairs services. So we look at that to ensure that our model covers the 25 kilometer areas. We need to implement a new and cost-effective strategy to build on achievements to date, especially with regards to rural areas. This includes a combination of methods such as fixed low-cost and prefabricated buildings, shared sites, where we have two songs and one-stop service centers. We have mobile offices and the use of ICT-enabled channels. To devolve management of infrastructure to provincial managers while head office determines policy, plans, and provides support at national level. The desired number of service delivery points to achieve acceptable levels of access nationally is 744. And the following service points are currently available. We have 407 fixed service delivery of various sizes, including two song centers. In addition to the 409 service points, there are 5 refugee centers and 72 ports of entry. It's actually in addition to the 407 service points, we have 5 refugee centers and 72 ports of entry. There's 266 connected online health facilities, 117 mobile service delivery points which are fully computerized. The levels of functionality are varying across provinces. We have procured 25 4x4 service delivery points which are not computerized. Only one of those that we have computerized that we are using as a as a test to see how it can function. The DHA infrastructure expansion plan 2011-12 to 2014-15 continued. The criteria used to select priority offices to be opened during the MTEP period for 11-12 to 14-15. We have looked at DHA presence in district or local municipality. Where there's no presence, we had prioritized those and said, in a local municipality where Home Affairs does not exist, we should look at bringing a Home Affairs service to that local municipality. And preference was afforded to those areas where DHA does not have presence at district or local municipality. Then there's an urban rural bias that we had deliberately looked at. We have afforded preference to rural areas. The DPSA AfriScope proposals, there was a study undertaken by AfriScope as commissioned by the DPSA, that areas recommended by these recommendations that emanate from these would then be selected as a criteria. Then we have Tucson Service Centers. As per Minister's Strategic Directive, preference was also afforded to those areas where Tucson Centers are already established. And we are present in about 60% of the Tucson centers that are in the country. Then there's ISRB nodes. Preference was also afforded to those areas that fall within the ISRB nodes. The mobile unit outreach, we afforded those areas where mobile units cannot travel due to high hazardous or deficient road infrastructure. As outlined above, our focus going forward will be to acquire DHA-owned service delivery points in the form of fixed low-cost or prefabricated buildings, shared sites, and mobile units. This will gradually reduce the amount of funds required for leasing of buildings. As we move away from the leased portfolio of buildings that we to own, we will decrease the amount that is being made available for leases, so that we then are able to procure our own units and are able to build those that we would require. We're not losing sight of the focus on our clients. The strategy is generally aimed at expanding the DHA footprint to ensure that all clients are within 30 minutes or a 50-kilometer radius, as I indicated, of the closest DHA service point. And the planned outcomes in terms of the DHA infrastructure plan is the 30 in the MTEF period that I spoke about, and then we need to improve to implement the access model as we had indicated earlier on. In 2010-11, just to check our progress in terms of how we are doing in terms of our strategy, we have opened 10 offices nationally. Of those offices, there is a list available for the members if it is required. I'll be able to provide it when the presentation was sent, we did not include the names of the offices as to which offices are these, but it is available, and if it is required, we'll be able to provide it. So my apologies for not having provided it up front here. But then we have one office opened in the Eastern Cape, one in Gauteng, 5 in KwaZulu-Natal, 1 in Northern Cape, and 2 in Western Cape. A total of 10 offices were opened in the financial year 10-11. And then in 11-12, we opened a total of 4 offices, 1 in Eastern Cape, 3 in KwaZulu-Natal. And the DHA infrastructure expansion plan for 11-12-14-15 will explore options to expand the footprint in the following priority provinces during 12-13. For Free State, we're looking at one office. For Gauteng, we're looking at one. For the Northern Cape, we're looking at 6 offices, Northwest 2, Western Cape 5, which would give a total of about 15 offices. Then there's various notes that we've made there, which the members will look into. It's just notes to say these are the things we take into account in terms of what we need to do to ensure that this infrastructure strategy is put in place. Then the infrastructure plan for 13-14, we're looking at 8 offices to open nationally. This covers the whole 30 that we have spoken about in terms of the MTEF period. So this would ensure that we have a list of those. But because it's the priorities change over time, we take that entire list where the process has moved further. We then are able to go back and say we have looked at a particular area and should focus our energies in other areas as well. So the MTEP period, the planning that has taken place over the period also includes things that we would do that would come on stream as we're working along, because these processes are rolling processes and it becomes a bit of a challenge. If we were to just basically stick to a plan that we had crafted, we would find it difficult to open the offices in terms of our strategy. But then we also looked at 12 offices for 14-15. With the infrastructure expansion plan being 33 in total for the MTF period, with Mpumalanga not being given because we could not get a, not that it's excluded, because in terms of its footprint, we are present in all local municipalities in Mpumalanga. But then in terms of the expansion plan, we looked at other provinces to say where then do we go where there's possibilities of getting infrastructure in place. Then there's about 33 in total that we looked at for the infrastructure expansion plan. The look and feel project, we have in the department what we call the look and feel project. The look and feel project is it's a project that has been started to ensure that a conducive environment is created for both our staff members as well as the public that access our services. So in terms of this, we refurbish our offices. Because all the offices were in a sort of dilapidated state at some stage, we then made a concerted effort to bring it to an acceptable level of access, both for our public members as well as a conducive environment for our staff. So 26 offices were refurbished in 2010-11, both leased and state-owned. In 11-12, 18 offices were refurbished. There's a list that is available for this. For all these offices, when it is required, we'll be able to provide that. Then 15 offices are going to be refurbished. We have planned to refurbish for 12-13, and 15 for 13-14, and 15 for 14-15. In terms of the from 2008-09 to 2009-10, the number of offices that have been refurbished. Some of the offices have been refurbished as a result of us relocating to a particular area, and then we negotiate with the landlord to say, now that we will be with you for the next 5 or 6 years, this is the look and feel we have for our offices. So we had negotiated that some of these landlords then refurbished the offices to our specifications. And there's a total of 89 of those that have been refurbished in that manner, bringing this look and feel project closer to all the offices, the 407 offices that we have as civic services, providing services. So the summary of offices that have been refurbished for 11-12, the 18, in KwaZulu-Natal we've done 6, in Eastern Cape we've done 1, Gauteng we've done 6, in Mpumalanga 3, in Northern Cape we've done 2. You know, it's just unfortunate that I did not include the names. It's nicer to indicate the names of the offices rather than the numbers. For, you know, it's better to speak to a particular office in a particular area rather than to say in Gauteng there's 6. I should be mentioning the names of those offices. And my apologies for not having done that. And then for 11-12, in KwaZulu-Natal we have done in under Ladysmith. This is how we should have done the whole presentation in terms of what we had delivered. But we only did it for one slide, for 1 year, 11-12. We then are indicating these offices to say this is in KwaZulu-Natal, it's Inanda, we have Ladysmith, Mkungundlovu, Mkupula, Msingatops, Nitrozin, and Gauteng with Tutuza, Ekangala, Devon, Eldorado Park, Rathanda, Enate. Devon unfortunately was burned down at some stage, but after, just immediately after we had refurbished it, it unfortunately was burned down as a result of the service delivery problems that we had had in that area. Then in the Northern Cape, we have Carnarvon and Grobler's Wharf. We've included Carnarvon and Grobler's Wharf as those that have been refurbished, because we had them, as we sourced new premises, Carnarvon was created in the look and feel project as well as Grobler's Wharf. So we had instructed the landlord to do it according to our specifications, so that then it measures up to the look and feel project. Then in Mpumalanga, we had Leandra, Middleburg, Mkobolo, or in Kwaggafontein. Then in Eastern Cape, we had it all. The pictures we are displaying are just showing the before and after pictures of the offices. You would see the office in Credo on the left hand side, relative to it being shown there as it is when it was refurbished. It's a much nicer look as opposed to what it was previously. So it is to with Lady Smith, where the office was refurbished completely and a new look and feel. This was just to bring about that projection of an image of what sort of image that the Home Affairs has trying to project for itself. And these are the buildings under construction. Let's put that each other. So Bukeng is complete. There's a few things that are still being done, like your electricity and telecom lines that are being put up. And we will be moving, we envisage to move in at the end of September, the beginning of October, into Sebokeng. Futadichaba, we envisage to move in by the 1st of April 2013. So these are the projects that are underway in terms of construction. Various other projects are at various stages of completion. We have Taung, where we have just met with the contractor to finalize the processes, the DPW processes. And there's also Toyando, where we are busy refurbishing, as well as Makado. We're busy rebuilding a new office. So there's various offices that are under construction. So the money that has been given to us, it's money that I suppose is well spent, if I could say that. The expenditure to date, the amount, there's a budget for the look and feel was about 12.3. For municipal services was 48.9 million. And leases we had given 237.2 million. For capital works, it's 42.9 million. And plain maintenance allocations were 3 million. Budget spent to date of the look and feel, of the 12 million, we've spent about 598,491.50. This is just carryovers from the previous financial year, where projects that were completed the 31st of March had to be paid in the current financial year's budget. Then municipal fees, to date, we have spent 25.1 million. Leases, we have spent 95.6 million. The amount of money includes leases for our various head offices, the four head offices within Pretoria as well. Then the capital works, we spent about 10.3 million. And plain maintenance, we already have spent about 2.8 million, with the budget available 194 for this remainder of the 6 months, 194,807, with capital works remaining with 32.5 million and leases remaining with 141.6 million, municipal services remaining with 18.7, and the look and feel project is still left with about 11.7 million. And issues for consideration, the footprint or channel expansion is imperative to redressing the imbalances of access to services by the previously disadvantaged communities. The use of mobile offices, connecting hospitals, using Tusong centers, using 4x4s, and having permanent service points. This is an issue for consideration, given that we are aware of the fact that spatial planning in the country previously was informed by privilege for those few, and thus planning was skewed towards those that were privileged, and thus as we work towards rebalancing those imbalances for access, we're looking at rural. That's why we have a strategy of a rural bias towards ensuring that our offices are located closer for those communities that are in rural areas, more specific. And then there's office refurbishment, which is critical for the corporate image and for a conducive working environment. Given the fact that the Department of Home Affairs is labor-intensive in rendering services, it is imperative that we ensure that this look and feel gets concluded and an environment that is conducive for our staff is being created. But there is a dependency on Department of Public Works. It remains one of the biggest obstacles in footprint expansion. And there are budget constraints, of course, in the face of competing priorities for services rendered. Other priorities step in and works projects get put aside. Although there's budget allocated, but the priorities within organization gets to take other priorities get to take precedence over those that we should be focusing on. Then the staffing, IT, and equipment for offices as part of the footprint expansion master plan. These challenges are with regard to cables being stolen, because Telkom still provides data access using copper cables. And there are offices that are operating with less than three officials. We have an example of Fox Res, Inanda, and Bulwa. Whilst we expand our footprint, we are mindful of the fact that in some of the offices, you'd have a fewer number of staff available because the department is allocated a set number of people per annum. So we are aware of the fact, but it becomes an issue then to be considered for us as an organization. Then the options that we have looked into, we have said we want to reprioritize the strategic priorities and budget to address access for service challenges. We continue opening new offices as per our strategic plan. But there's also a conundrum within the organization, whether we reduce the number of offices to be opened and we clean up what we currently have. So that as we move ahead, we would look at what is the best option for us. Is it better to just clean up all that we have or expand with a view of reducing the access, the time it takes for our people to access services? But there is also a commitment to improve access to services as per the strategic plan as well as the Minister's Performance Agreement. We pursue self-acquisition option to minimize dependency on DPW and accelerate acquiring of office accommodation. The DHA can pursue the option of sharing accommodation with other government institutions. We can persuade National Treasury for additional funding, as we had done with the business case that we had submitted in August 2010. We need to accelerate the national population registration campaign strategy, for this helps us in reducing the footprint in terms of accessibility. For a concerted effort gets made to launch these national stakeholder forums, and our stakeholders then become our foot soldiers in ensuring that services get taken to the people. So we need to occupy and capacitate all existing Tsusong centers and connect health facilities where maternity wards are available. The strategic interventions required, or in terms of the DHA infrastructure plan, we need to engage with the Ministry of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development with regard to the eviction of DHA at magistrates' offices in most of the provinces. And maybe we need to interact with the CEO of SAPO, if this CEO has already been appointed, in relation to the partnerships that we had had with SAPO of co-locating our offices. We had had an agreement with SAPO where SAPO had given us a space in their offices, for they have a massive footprint, and we had looked at some of the space that they have in their offices, and we had come into an some of the offices, but at lower than market-related rates, so that we are then able to provide services to our people. But as an interim solution, the Department of Home Affairs should consider leasing of park homes as a recommendation in review of the footprint expansion amidst budgetary constraints. We need to consider and develop a public-private partnership model that I spoke about. But I thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. May I apologize for coming in late. It was due to other parliamentary work. And I'd like to thank Honourable Gang for holding the fort. That was the input from the department regarding the infrastructure development. Time for your questions and comments. Honourable Marcella, followed by Honourable McIntosh, Honourable De Freitas. In that order, Honourable Matebe with the list.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure there's a problem with the mic. Maybe the phone should be off. Yes, thank you. Thank you for a well-constructed presentation. So the question, Chairperson, is on the last comment by Mhlekazi, that perhaps one would have to look at utilizing stakeholders as instead of focusing on the footprint in terms of the reaching out to the communities. I would like to understand what he means by that, because obviously if you have stakeholders or people working with the department, be that the situation as the current as it currently stands, that you've got stakeholder what are these bodies that you have there, but you've got stakeholder management that are there instead of the old system where the department will still be working in silos with the communities. But you can have a situation where you replace the replace the Home Affairs to the existence of those stakeholders. So I'd like you to actually elucidate on what you meant by that, whether the forums will now be the new offices. The other question, Chair, is that on the presentation, on page 25, you spoke say, about the refurbishment of existing offices as perhaps as something that you should maybe put it on hold until you were talking about the suspension of opening new offices, that you suspend that exercise. And then you focus on those offices that need to be refurbished. Again, I would challenge you that it should not be at the disadvantage of the rest of the populace that then you focus on making other offices beautiful, whereas there's no service at all in other communities. I think that would be a disingenuity on our part as government to say, especially us in the committee, when we sit here as members of parliament to get complaints. In some areas, you have actually highlighted when you presented that there are people who travel distances where they would spend huge sums of money to reach the offices of the Home Affairs way beyond the 25-kilometer radius. That then is, in fact, an antithesis of what we're suggesting here. The other area, Chair, is that the option of engaging Treasury, I would support. That option, in fact, suggests that you need more money to keep the service. There is no country, Chairperson, that can have a peace of mind without knowing how many people we have in the country. And most importantly, when you have South Africans who are not registered, that is a problem. And I'm sure one of the areas that the conference that was held last week between the 3rd and the 7th, it focused primarily on ensuring that members of parliament and the communities and government together work in ensuring that people are registered. So once you're trying to universalize that in Africa, we should be taking the road that we've already taken as South Africa to ensure that people learn some lessons from us, and I think they've learned so many. So we should actually continue on that trajectory. On page 8, my other question really, I'm sure it will be the second last question. I don't want to take most of your time. It's on page 8. Where is it? Yeah, well, the question here was on looking at the numbers, the figures that you have. You have 407 fixed service delivery centers, service points. And then in the second bullet point, you put you put the 409. So I want to know which one is the correct figure, so that we know. And then on page 23, that should be my last chair for this, on this slide. Alright. You're spending money on capital works, but what does that money entail? If you're spending money on capital works and the public works is spending money in construction in general and the leasing, I would like to understand what is it that this money talks to, if you were to piggyback, I mean, if you were to pen it down and say, this is the structure of our expenditure. We have 6 months to go, but we almost spent the rest of the budget that is allocated on maintenance. Now, if there would be a serious maintenance that needs to be done, then you don't have money. It's a serious problem, Chair. So maybe that's where you also need to engage Treasury and say, please help us. That one is a disaster waiting to happen. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Molloy, for a useful presentation. Madam Chair, I just want to make one or two comments and ask our team one or two questions. Madam Chair, there is a sort of agenda or feeling that DHA should take over its own what I think in business is called facilities management, and it's something which all the banks and the businesses and they talk about public-private partnerships do, and they're very sophisticated facilities management programs, software, to deal with it. And obviously you look at a thing like Capitec Bank, which is expanding into rural areas. You go to PEP stores. If you want to see something which works well but doesn't, I think, have a sophisticated facilities management, every little rural area has a China shop. And these guys find a place to have a China shop, or a shop from China. I think what we're looking at, and I think Mr. Molloy alluded to the post office, which has this enormous footprint. And if you want to look at rural areas, there's a thing called Taba, Kwa Taba, they used to be called, the old Wenela. They got into every rural area. So I think what we are dealing with is not rocket science, it's just accessing the right extra help. And I think the department has made a huge step forward. I mean, I really think, Madam Chair, we are impressed. And what I prefer to call branding, which you call the look and feel, so that people know there's the Home Office brand, like they know there's a Capitec brand or a First National Bank brand or there's a bright red APSA brand, they know there's Home Affairs. So I don't want to seem too critical, but I think that is an area which one could source in terms of public-private partnerships, people who do facilities management. Because if you're running 407 facilities, I mean, that's an enormous task, Madam Chair, by any standards. The question that I have in terms of strategic, and maybe Mr. Molloy can reply to that. He mentions in his report all the mobile stations. Now, we, Madam Chair, sort of visited some of them in KwaZulu-Natal, and the difficulty is that some of them aren't working. In fact, you can see the dust collected under their wheels. And essentially, the problem, it seems to, is the IT side. The satellite dishes are not worked and properly set up. But I just wonder if one's going to go to park homes, whether there isn't, and this is something one's got to look at, and I'm just thinking in terms of costs, and which the department, it doesn't need the public works to do it. But if one moved your mobile phones, say to follow pension payout points. Now, every rural community knows when pensions are being paid, if they're in, unless they have to go to the post office or somewhere else. So it's not too difficult for them to also know that on a certain day in each week, there's a Home Affairs mobile office there. So they know, look, the difficulty is if they need a death certificate or something urgent like that. So that's useful to have an office, a permanent office. But I just wondered if it isn't to give access, people know that there's a mobile office every month or every fortnight at a particular place, they can come and get whatever they need. All right, that's the one aspect I wanted to ask about, whether they've looked at those possibilities, because I do think this department's object is to become paperless, and it's already making huge strides into what I would call high-tech servicing. And if you've got these satellites, you've got fingerprints, harness, and so on, that actually, in a sense, reduces your staff component, although it does mean you have to have very well-trained staff. Now, the other question I wanted to ask about opening an office, and I'm sure the Human Resources Department probably have these figures, how many is a minimum number of people to staff an office, bearing in mind that people need leave and so on. And that's my in a sense, I've got three questions. Are you in touch with people in the facilities management business, whether it's banks or pet stores or whatever it is? Are you seriously considering, shall we say, reinforcing and further empowering your mobile systems to provide easier services in the rural areas? And then the last question is, what is the minimum requirement of staff, and does the department have a measure? I mean, it's like your banks, everybody, that they are constantly doing market research. How many thousands of people, what are they doing? And the minute you see there's enough people, whoops, up comes a shopping center, and there's PEP and ShopRite Checkers, the people who serve the poorer people, and they're there. But how do they make that decision? Because they are constantly doing market research. Now, look, obviously we're different. We're not there for profit. We're there for service. But even so, I think some of their experience and skills could be very helpful to the department if the department doesn't already get there. I think that's really the three questions. But Madam Chair, I just don't think we must underestimate what an enormous job it is to keep track of all these premises and to do all these negotiations on leases, etc. Sorry, there's a last point I want to make. Public Works, I mean, if Public Works was functioning really efficiently, and maybe it's coming right, I mean, they have a new minister, and maybe things will get better. But, I mean, Madam Chair, that's the ideal department to provide all the services, because they've got, well, I imagine they've still got people, I mean, they've got centuries of institutional memory. in public works. And public works has been around providing services to government departments, whether one approved of those services or not, for 70 or 80 years. So they know how to do it. And if they were functioning efficiently, they're the ideal partners for the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Department. I just got two or more of concern. I'm from Ephraim Mogale. This is Mamlo Hall. We don't have a office and suddenly it costs village to travel more than last minus 50 kids to come to the town for registration. That is not a disadvantage rural people where transport infrastructure and opportunities as it is far from the people to get home affairs offices. Second question is question of this lease issues. I'm just concerned that why the department can't they make a mechanism of buying their own buildings rather than leasing? I mean, to spend 141 million on leases. Just to be somewhere helping others. The last one is question of port of entry. There's an area with all ports of entry. They call it no man's land. I don't know what does it mean. Because I'd rather thought and think of, can we maybe as a department negotiate with SADC neighboring countries and implement one-stop center for the people to come and to use that no man's area. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Defrit.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions that I have on the presentation. It's been probably the fourth or fifth meeting that we've had where the Department of Public Works has come up. And I'm again making the plea that we actually meet with the relevant officials of this department, because clearly it is a big issue to the objectives of Home Affairs. I must disagree with Honourable McIntosh. I think Public Works is super inefficient, and I have very specific views about that department. So, and it's proving it to be the case as it is now. So I really think that we need to meet with them and try and intervene and assist Home Affairs, because they really are a stumbling block to the objectives that the Department of Home Affairs which wishes to meet. That's really just the first comment. Then, just going through the different slides. Throughout the whole presentation, I won't talk about public works anymore, but I mean, it's up all the time, so I won't repeat those questions, because I suspect the gentleman here can't actually answer, because their hands are tied as well. What I do want to ask is, all these new rollouts of offices, which is great, is there a marketing or a publicity campaign linked to that? It's all very well and fine having these offices, but if the local communities are not aware of this, then it's pointless. Suppose you could talk, if that could be unpacked. Can't find this page. There's one slide that particularly concerns me, and that is our page number 22, number 20, expenditure to date. In every case, the budgeted amount surpasses the available budget. So if that could be just spoken to us, how do you budget an amount that's greater than what you actually have? So if that could be discussed. I know one of the solutions that's put there that the department would approach National Treasury for additional funds. But I must tell you, so is every other ministry in this country doing the same thing. And I can tell you from my experience that National Treasury is pretty much going to say no, because there just isn't the money. So if that could be unpacked, because that's most concerning, in some cases dramatic amounts of money that's been budgeted when the money isn't available, so that could be just unpacked. And then, although it is mentioned, I get the sense that there isn't more creative thinking, when it comes to the department, in looking at other things. I'm glad to hear, to see that listed here, for example, public-private partnerships and linking up with other organizations and so forth, but I just sense there isn't enough of that. Because the reality is that there isn't, the money is not going to stretch as far as we'd want it to, and we'd need to look for partnerships, so that could be unpacked. Is it just sort of an initial idea? Is it really seriously being pursued? And then it talks about here on your slide 24 about challenges with IT and equipment, and the problem being telecom. Are other options being looked at? Because there are other options available. We don't have to be tied to telecom. And then one of the points on the same page, it talks about the department being labour intensive in rendering their services. I don't know if that's stated as a good or a bad thing. I think it's a bad thing. Surely automation and improving and speeding up services in an automated way, which, by the way, will create additional jobs, not reduce it, being looked at, and if so, what are the details thereof, and if not, why not? And there also on that same page, it talks about offices operating with less than 3 officials. That can be an impact. How are those offices functioning? Surely this is a problem in the actual delivery of services in those offices, and also for the staff. How is it possible for 3 people to run an entire area? That's very, very concerning. So that could be unpacked. And I think that may be... just want to double check. That's it, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I'd like to thank the presentation. My concern, Chair, is around in our 4th slide, the lack of suitable offices and accommodation in rural areas. Really, this is a worrying thing. Because rural areas are the most vulnerable ones. Why don't we use the advantage of abundance of land from the chief? I think we need to redress, Chair, the imbalances of access of services in rural areas to meet the needs of our rural citizens. There's been so many stories, Chair, around providing services to our rural people. Why do we have to urbanize everything? I think, Chair, it's time really that we should consider using what is available, like schools and clinics. In rural areas, some clinics are used as hospitals. Why don't we use those? So, I've got questions that has the access model for rural service delivery noted in 2010-11 annual report being adopted? And if so, how is it being implemented? My second question, Chair, is around offices in Mpumalanga. So in slide 9, there's nothing from Mpumalanga. Slide 11, slide 12, and 13, there's nothing from Mpumalanga. I don't know why. I'm asking this, Chair, because Mpumalanga is more rural and people are suffering there. So, for example, in Standerton, the offices there are in a dilapidated state for many years. I really don't know why Mpumalanga is not there. Is it because there is everything there, or I don't know. My last question, Chair, is on slide 16.
the total number of offices that are refurbished there. Chair, we really need to see places here, it's a plea. So that these numbers of provinces won't assist us. We need to know places so that we can be able to do our oversight properly as members of parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. It is important that the rural areas have accessible services because they are the people who are poor and live far away from these services and also must pay heavy taxi fares to get to such places. So it's important that we really look at the issue of rural people. I wanted to raise also the issue of park homes. We visited was it Northwest where we saw Itso saying having park homes, and we wouldn't like the department to use park homes as offices for people, because when it rains, people won't be able to go to such offices, or when it's windy or whatever weather that may be on that maybe particular day. So I don't I wouldn't encourage that the department to look at that as an option. Honorable Madonna Peterson, you had your hand up. Okay. Over to Ntate Moloi and your team.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks, Honorable Members. I must appreciate the input that has been made in terms of the presentation that was made to you. It is acknowledged that as a department we had deliberately looked at the rural versus urban strategy to acquire facilities. Our deliberate drive is to ensure that people at rural areas are more looked after in terms of accessibility. That is why it's built into the access model and the strategy that we have adopted as an organization. So we are sensitive to the issues of the rural people in terms of them accessing public services. So we appreciate that the members have noted it and are strongly highlighting it for us to bring it to the fore even more importantly, so that at a glance you'll be able to pick it up. The concerns that were raised, I'll start with the first one, the first questions that were raised by Honorable Masela. The use of stakeholder forums as a replacement for acquisition of facilities. Stakeholder forums are designed to enable us to know where our services are needed. So they are not going to be used as a strategy or change strategy to access to have people accessing home affairs services. But these are a way of community engagement. Communities engaging us to say, raising a red flag where we are not able to provide services. And it's a deliberate strategy that we have adopted as an organization to say, engage us, involve us, and we're not sitting at ivory towers, and we are there to serve people to ensure that their services are being delivered. So it's not going to be a strategy that replaces acquisition of facilities. It's just going to enhance the way in which we deploy our mobiles, so that our mobiles, as we deploy them, we have acknowledged that they are not working optimally as we would love to work them, but we want to use them in a way that would be concerted. As we go out to our stakeholder forum engagement, we would then take the pool of resources at our disposal. Maybe that's the creativity that has to be brought on board, because we are aware that funds are not limitless. There's a limit in terms of funds, and what has been allocated to us, we try to make it stretch in as much as we possibly can by using all these various means that are available to us to ensure that then we provide services to our people. That in a way is then entrenching the stakeholder forums, not to replace acquisition of offices, but as a manner in which we are able to get to our people to get us to give them services. The issue on the whether it's on the page 8 slide, whether it's 407 or 409, when I made the presentation, I corrected it as I was making the presentation. Perhaps it did not come out clearly that I am correcting it, but it was. I noticed that it is indeed, it's 407 facilities that we have at our disposal that we're taking care of. In terms of the suspension of opening new facilities versus refurbishing what we currently have, it is a debate we have had as an organization to say it is not going to be good to open a lot of facilities when you are not going to be utilizing those facilities optimally. The number of staff you have would not enable you to optimally use the facilities. And thus it also comes to the question of whether Home Affairs has an understanding of the norms that we have adopted to get a number of people per a number of people in a square kilometer radius or whatsoever. The scientific information that pertains to that. We had then commissioned a study in terms of the HSRC in 2007. We are currently in the processes of doing a refresher study with the CSIR to look at whether what we are doing as an organization is it still relevant. Are we scientifically addressing the issues that can an office really be run by three people? Is it adequate? If we as a model delimit to say a local office small can only be run by three people, what are we saying? Are we saying the three people are going to be doing whatever services? We always, as we make presentations, always refer to Home Affairs as taking people over the life cycle. We show pictures of the cradle to grave as a service that Home Affairs provide. But then it indicates to us we must prove scientifically, either to National Treasury or to us as an organization, to convince ourselves to say the norms that we have set for ourselves are adequate or improper given the circumstances in which we operate. So we are aware of those issues and we are dealing with them to ensure that as we respond to some of these things, we respond scientifically, so we respond with the body of knowledge we have at our disposal to ensure that things are done properly. The option to engage Treasury, it is indeed supported. We are going to engage and continue to engage Treasury, but Treasury doesn't want to be engaged without you bringing a plan. It's like creating a business plan where you say, I want to open a business, but you don't have a plan. No sane financier would finance you. So as an organization, we say, we're looking at how then do we, with the allocations that we've been given, how do we then make sure that we provide the services as mandated by the government to ensure that it reaches all the people that we are serving. As we deal with matters from cradle to grave, is the allocation given to us, is it adequate? Are we doing it as optimally as we should? Are we as responsible as we should be with the funds that are allocated to us? So that is the thinking that goes on within the organization. And it's something that we engage on very, very robustly so to ensure that things are done properly. Honorable McIntosh says, have we looked at are we in touch with facility specialists? You know, it's something that we, as an organization, would want to pursue further because we understand we have limitations in terms of expertise. But we know that there's expertise that is available from the private sector. That's why we're talking this public-private partnership, that we can hold each other's hands. We have started the engagement with SARS, which is a government organization, in terms of the modernization and all these other things. That enables us, with the strides they've made so far, to get for them to hold our hand and be able to teach us the things that they've been taught. They've acquired experience over a number of years that they've been transformed to the extent that we are willing and able to learn and then be able to implement for ourselves and ensure that these things are done properly. But then we will look at what other facilities, pep stores. Pep stores is, the issue, it might be said in tongue-in-cheek, that a China shop is opened in any corner. If you go around the country anywhere, at any place, you inevitably are going to come across a China shop. How do they get it right? But it's something that we need to learn and be able to bring it into government as knowledge, so that we are able to deliver our services. It's we acknowledge that the input that has been made, and we are going to pursue it further and see how we can take it forward and build it into our strategy as well. I did not know about TEBA, but it's something that others might have known about it. It's something we're going to take through and are able to. We'll follow through on that as well. The mobile offices, the IT connectivity is a problem. We have also acknowledged that IT connectivity for our mobiles has always been a challenge. That is why we, as an organization, have entered into an agreement with CETA to enable us to improve the connectivity of these mobile offices. But the CETA also has challenges. For these were procured from another company, and they were custom made. It becomes a bit difficult for them to get a person that would be, or an organization that would be able to deal with correcting the satellite connectivity. So this then calls us to action to say, what then do we do? What are our options left in the face of things like this? So that is why it's built into the modernization project, to say among things that we need to do for ourselves is to move away from this dependency on others, to be able to do these things on our own, to create the necessary capability within the organization and be able to ensure that we are then able to deal with these challenges on a headlong basis. Then the suitcases that we had envisaged to build with the modernization program are going to address connectivity in the long term. But it's something that is at the end of the modernization project. But it's something that we looked at and are saying, as we replace these mobiles, we're going to be replacing them with something that is going to be long term, that is going to be durable and is able to withstand the rigors of the terrain in which these mobiles are working. The bulky mobiles may need to be replaced with 4x4s. That is why we have included 4x4s as an option to look at how then do we provide services using these silky smooth 4x4s that are going to go through the terrain with ease. But it's something that we are looking at. The issue of whether the department, how many, what is the minimum number of staff dealing with the people it serves, that's what I alluded to say it's a measure of organizational design studies that are undertaken. And as Home Affairs, we do have a unit in HR that deals with organizational design. And my role as Chief Director of Channel Management is to ensure that we come together and look at a model that would enable us to do a norm study that will enable us then to answer all the issues that are being raised. It is something that was done, and it was implemented across the organization that a person can be able to serve a number of people at a particular time, and it should take a particular time. But things have moved. We have improved in terms of the way we were doing business in the past. And as an organization, we need to go back and look at, with regard to the benefits that emanated from the change that Home Affairs has undergone, what are the things that we still need to train our people to get better at doing, and what is the effect of that training going to be? So in essence, we are looking at how best we, as an organization, are going to be taking this moving forward. So there is this thinking that is going on. And the concerns about creative thinking, whether Honorable De Freitas, is there creative thinking in the organization? Are there other options? We are looking at that as well. To say, as an organization, we've been looking at whether we will be able, with the modernization, as we get better, you'd find that others are being made. I'm trying to avoid the term redundant, but eventually the people would be redundant at some other functions within a back office or a front office. You then need to reprioritize and look at the same staff. How do you then upskill them to go and as you improve in terms of your services? How do you upskill them and get them to deliver services in a different way? So in essence, it's not going to create problem. Our modernization as an organization is going to help us to get better at the things that we're doing. We have done studies in the past, the CSIR and HSRC studies, to look at how best are we serving our people. And these are the things that we looked at. We're doing a refresher study again, as I said, to look at how best then can we say with certainty that indeed the number of people that are serving clients is adequate or is sufficient in terms of the norms that we have established. The footprint expansion, is it publicized? Is there publicity for it? Or is there marketing? Let me admit that as channel management, I have not done an effort to publicize the footprint expansion to the public members out there. But within the organization, it's something that we are on an ongoing basis agitating for. But as soon as we have the buy-in from within the organization, we then can take it outside of the organization to say, and this is exactly the forum that is going to enable us to be held to account. So you came here, you promised that you're going to open an office in Mkobola, for instance, in Mpumalanga. You did not do it. Why did you not? So these are the engagements that we appreciate to open our eyes as well to the bias that we have, so that we move away from this urban bias and focus on rural offices as well. So in essence, the HSRC studies and the CSIR studies that the refresher studies that we are undertaking are going to enable us to make an informed decision on the basis of whatever that we come up with. Namadeva, I hope I've responded to your question on the Marble Hall local municipality, where people are taking long distances to go to offices. We acknowledge that it's an issue. There was you could see on my presentation that Mpumalanga is sort of neglected. Okay. The demarcation, sorry man. You know, I need to get my head around demarcations as well. Yeah. Okay. We will then look at that and see how best, in terms of the model that we're proposing, are we going to address that. We are going to work on it. The cost of entry, the no man's land issue, what does it mean? Can I leave that to my colleague?
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. With regard to no man's land is normally demarcated between the two countries. So it is basically a point whereby two countries would have a port of entry. That piece of land that makes a separation in terms of entering either country then becomes no man's land. But with regard to one-stop center or one-stop border post, currently we do have under discussions with Mozambique. We've identified the Bombo Gashia as a port of entry whereby we're going to create one-stop border post. And that process is led by South African Revenue Services as the chairperson of BCOCC. There is an agreement in place, and I think the different stakeholders are currently engaged in the creation of that sort of border post. I'm not a critical area, it was with regard to SAPS in terms of carrying of firearms across lands, because you need to also protect them in case they are involved in an operation pursuing a fugitive into each other's country, that the officers need to be protected. But otherwise, there is a draft agreement between the two countries, and we wanted to use Mozambique as an example to create one-stop border post, and then from there we'll be looking into other select member states. But during 2010, we did have joint operations between with some of our member states in order to ensure this cooperation on border management issues. And issues, we seem to be working quite well with our immediate neighbors in particular in terms of joint operations to ensure that there is efficiency in the management of the one-stop border post, but also in fighting the issue of illegal migration.
Thanks, on the issue of how the access model has been implemented and adopted by the department, and how is it being implemented? The model, the access model, is implemented within the organization. The issue that is being a problem, it's the funds that follow the model. For if you were to implement the model in totality, and for people to access home affairs within 25 kilometers, you would require twice what is being allocated to home affairs to make sure that this model is implemented in totality. That is why we, as an organization, are looking at options that are available to us, given the limit in terms of the funds that we have at our disposal. So what we then go on and do is look at mobile offices, look at the e-channels, like your FMF channels, where people, when they have made an application at Home Affairs, we are able then to look at, to inform them on the progress that the application is making at every stage of the process. So these are the efforts that we make creatively to try to address the issue of access and the limit in terms of the money and allocation given to the department. But we are aware of the fact that we need to implement it in totality and have to ensure that the people do access home affairs within a particular area that would improve accessibility to our facilities. The slide that you are referring to, that there's nothing from Mpumalanga, and that the standard 10 is in a dilapidated state. Some of the offices that the Home Affairs is located in are in the Department of Justice. And you look at the state of dilapidation, and because we have put a sign, a big sign of Home Affairs, people walking into an office would think that actually that office belongs to Home Affairs. But you find that we actually have been allocated the office. This conference hall is huge. A smaller office than this conference hall where Home Affairs is being asked to provide services. So, in essence, then it becomes a bit of a challenge to refurbish the entire premises. That is why there's an engagement that's going to be held with the Department of Justice to enable us to look at how best can we make our facilities conducive for our staff in those environments. So that in the event that they relocating or are refurbishing their offices, they should not forget that Home Affairs, we have a new look and feel, and they should include us in their spec. And we are going to be using the funds allocated to us to look at how best we can ensure that these are done properly. Maybe to look at the allocations in terms of slide 23, the amount budgeted and the amount the budget spent. If you were to look at the capital works, how it works, we're monitoring what Home Affairs has been allocated and it has been handed over to Public Works. It's not funds that Home Affairs is running with, but it's funds that are allocated to Home Affairs, given over to Public Works to ensure that as the landlord of the public sector, they take care of the funds. We monitor that under Capital Works. And most of the funds that have been used so far, the up to 10.3 million that has been used out of the 42 Capital Works budget allocated to us. It's mostly on consultant fees and fees on facilities that we had identified, like your Taung facility that we want to have implemented, the Toyando facilities. Those are the funds that have been used by public. So we monitor on a weekly basis. There's a meeting where we sit with Public Works, look at progress in terms of the funding and how they're spending that money, to ensure that the things as been allocated to us are being done properly. So that is the issue on the spending on Capital Works. Whether the amount is sufficient, it's another story altogether. It will never be sufficient for the things that we want to do. But it's up to us to be creative about the things that we are doing with the limited resources at our disposal, financial resources at our disposal. That is why we have mobiles, we have all these other options that we are looking at. So I hope I'm responding to the concerns raised by members in terms of the allocations on the amount of money that are on that slide. Then in terms of park homes, Honourable Chair, the warning is taken into account. We, as it is being discouraged, the word of caution, we do accept it, and we will move away from park homes, not as a result of, but it was an option we looked at as an easy option. But if it's an easy option, it doesn't say that it's something that we cannot move away from, because now concerns have been raised with regard to a facility that is of a similar kind. It's saying that is a problem. So we shouldn't perpetuate it's saying in other areas. You know, we also have it in one of our areas in KwaZulu-Natal, where our staff members are in a park home. The fortunate thing is in that area, there is a mall that is currently under construction, and we are going to relocate our staff to the mall. So we are aware of the issues in park homes, the heat that our public members are exposed to. It's unbearable, and the staff are always complaining when they're in a park home. So as an option, I think the word of caution is being taken into account, and we'll move away from it. Thanks, Chair. Thank you so much, Honourable Members.
Noted, Dr. Mwasil. You know, in Johannesburg, we have two offices next to each other. Well, it's not because of your own making, it's because of the old system where we had the Bantu Affairs on Commissioner Street, and we have another Harrison Street, which was serving white people. What has happened to the Market Street one? Do we still have Market Street as well as Harrison? Because there was a time when there was a move that Market Street was going to be used for something else, and most of the services would be provided by Harrison Street. If we could get your answer. And you know, we one time as a portfolio committee asked that we should have a Home Affairs office in Soweto. I know we have the office at 707, but 707 was not a permanent structure, because that structure belonged to a church, and you had to negotiate with the church to provide us with the structure. I want to know as to what is happening with regard to that, because that Soweto home is one of the look and feel offices. It's beautiful. But now I want to know as to, do we maybe have in our minds that one day we will build an office in Soweto, because Soweto is a big area with a big population there. And we have noticed that we do have I'm not sure that it's a service point at Maponya Mall. I know we have an office there, but we haven't visited that. We anticipate visiting that with all members of the portfolio committee who are in Soweto, that we will visit this office at Maponya Mall one day. I don't know when. Honorable Ngasela, you had your hand up. Honorable De Freitas, you will follow.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question on Capital Works, the response to that question is not convincing. Because I asked for a particular explanation, which is not forthcoming, by reference to consultancy fees and others. It does not make any sense to me as to what is it that you're spending the money on. Well, I appreciate the response and the attempt, but I think I need more, sir. Because it's money that is spent on Capital Works, and yet you've got Public Works that is doing this service. Now, I need to understand, really, in layman's terms, without being too technical about it. And the other one is the question that I've raised, or the amount of money that we've spent, and we are midway has spent almost all our budget on maintenance. Now, I was asking a question as to what is it that we have as a mitigating strategy in case we have a major disaster or major maintenance work that needs to be done and we have then run out of funds. So what is it that you have in stock as a plan? So that is the question, Che, you know, which I've raised. I know you are not the Sangoma. You're not going to say, Fumani, go and soak down there, soak and use the second door. Or SDO. But that's really up to you how you wish to respond to that. Thank you, Che.
Thank you, Che. I'm just reiterating this page 23, and maybe I'm misunderstanding or missing something. But if you could just explain to me very slowly how you reconcile these figures. I mean, are you saying that you are budgeting amounts that you actually don't have for, and you're hoping for the best when you discuss with Treasury? Is that the bottom line? Because these numbers are more than what you've been given. That's really the bottom line. I'm being as simple from accounting perspective as possible. So that can just be explained to me, how is it that you're still budgeting for a higher amount than what you've actually been allocated? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chair. The amount indicated on slide 23, it's actually, it's indicated amount budgeted, but it's actually the allocation for infrastructure, for maintenance, as well as your municipal services. So this is not a wish list of some sort, but it's an actual allocation for the department for that line item. But we're tracking that in terms of what has been spent so far. And the issue being raised, whether capital works, we need to explain in more detail as to whether the amount, where would we get the money from? Should there be a major disaster in the organization? Maybe the response would come from the branch that is responsible for this, and I would solicit and respond in writing to the members so that the response that would come forth should not be speculative, but should be informed by what exactly it is that is going to be done. So I'll note it and take it back to the organization, and we'll respond in writing back to the honourable members, so that it gets clearly elucidated by the experts within the organisation. I don't want to pretend to be an all-knowing jack that knows nothing. So I'll take it back and we'll bring back the response. On the issue, honourable chair, of what is happening in Soweto. We have opened an office in Barra Mall as well. There are three offices in Soweto now. It's the one in Jablani, the one in Barra Mall and Maponya Mall. We envisage to open another office on the east side of Soweto, which is the Jababu Mall, and around Dobsonville area. So that we have coverage of Soweto in totality. But in terms of a facility being built in Soweto, it's a valid concern. We can't continue to lease. If you were to look at the lease budget in the organization, we spent 237 million on leases relative to 42 million on capital works. That goes to show you that the spending is skewed in terms of what has been given to us as an organ. So we need to move away from leases and move over to capital works, where things then get built for us. We build our own facilities to ensure that then services are rendered in a manner that we would want them rendered for us. So it's an effort that has to be made by the organization itself. The Market Street, what is happening at Market Street? We had indicated in the past that Market Street is going to be our premier permitting office. And the lease where the provincial manager sits in Gauteng expires in 2014 in May. So among the plans that we have is to relocate the provincial manager's office to Market Street, because it's a public it's a public owned facility that Public Works is managing for us. We can move in it, and we reduce the cost for leasing in terms of the PM's office. Then we would have the PM's office in Market Street. We'd have the premier permitting office in Market Street, as well as some elements of the Learning Academy at Market Street. So these needs have been given over to Public Works so that they can then start the process of refurbishing that office and making it conducive and workable again, and it becomes a fully fledged office for both service as well as for the location of the provincial manager's office. I hope I answered all the questions, Madam Chair. Thanks.
Yeah, did you say you have an office in Jablani? Thank the members for their